On this week's show, discussing transformation burnout with Dr. Giovanna Brassfield with Brassfield & Associates, LLC. In this week's news, back in time, bonus episodes, automation, and more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, I'm back. I got Nathan Wood wearing his So Built t-shirt and his CDX branded hat. Man, you're repping today.
I'm just a walking advertisement, walking billboard.
Yeah, you're the billboard for change in the industry, which makes you perfect for today's episode, doesn't it?
Absolutely. All kinds of change going on.
Yeah, you got attitude adjustment change, you got data adjustment change, and we've got Dr. Giovanna Brassfield, but we're going to call you, as you do, Dr. G. Dr. G, how are you?
I am well, and thank you both for having me today to this conversation. I truly appreciate it.
It's great to be here, and so everybody listening knows I have been trying to reel in Dr. G for a while. She was trying to dink and dodge and dip and dive, but I wouldn't let her. Because she's not playing dodgeball with the ConTech Crew. We're going to bring you here. So I think everybody tuning in is going to really love this one. Before we get into the episode, though, we got to pause for the cause.
For the last 20 plus years, I've been talking about this mind-body connection and working a lot on focusing on things like stress and nutrition and sleep and exercise and how that affects performance and how that affects longevity. We've been focusing on this peak level of mental, physical, and emotional performance. Construction in general is a highly stressful environment, and you see the stress. And you always get the "I'm fine" answer, but always try to dig a little deeper because people say, you know, I haven't been sleeping great, and I'm really eating crappy food, and I feel anxious, I feel depressed, I feel... You know, we'll start to really get into those conversations and figure out what's going on.
Those are the critical things people need it's the little steps, right? You're not here to replace a mental health diagnosis, right? You're here, but there's some resources you've got that can help people kind of figure out if, hey, they might be headed down towards that one.
Right, exactly. Barring some mental health diagnosis or if you think you have a mental health diagnosis, please go seek someone out and get that help and that diagnosis. But barring just a diagnosis or you're really struggling or having suicidal thoughts, you know, this isn't going to help you probably. But to check in and see where am I now and how do I keep from going down that rabbit hole, there's some great resources. And if you go to brentdarnell.com/resources, first, there's an emotional intelligence and physical symptom survey test. So we get your emotional profile, and we get your physical profile based on physical symptoms, and we tell how your body's working. And then we can correlate those two. And if you're experiencing burnout, it will show up in probably both of those evaluations. It's free. You just download it and do it. And just so see where you are. And if burnout's the top two or three that pop up and show up there, I would pay attention and start to really look at what are you doing with stress and nutrition and sleep and exercise and daily reflection and those kinds of things that we know we need to do to keep us healthy and keep us sane and keep us on track.
You've got to check in with where you are. You've got to work on balancing. It's not about the diagnosis. It's about preventing people from getting too far down the road. Like most of our construction folks that listen in, they take care of their cars. They keep them up to date. You know, this is no different. You've got to put in the maintenance on the body, on the mind, because you're racing this car around the track, right? We're not going to change that we're a bunch of race cars out there, but we can change that we do the right maintenance, take the right time, and really check in.
One more resource in there. It's the Tough Guy Survival Kit. Guy being gender neutral. It's specifically written geared toward more field folks, but there's a really great chapter on stress management and peak performance in there. And it talks about meditation techniques and mindfulness techniques and breathing techniques.
Well, those are all great resources. If you didn't hear that before, it's brentdarnell.com. That's BRENTDARNELL.com/resources. Check them out. They're there for free. Brent, thanks for joining us on this Pause for the Cause. All right. Remember, we're back on YouTube. Check out youtube.com/@thecontechcrew. And if we get our number reached, I'll buy Nathan a shirt that says "The Contech Crew, subscribe now," or something of that nature, so he can have a patch and really rep the rest of us. So remember, get out there to the YouTube channel, smash the subscribe button, get the shorts in your inbox. We're looking forward to having you there. Just want to keep you informed. At the Contech Crew, we focus on technology that solves industry problems, and we've always believed in our sponsors, so much so that I went to work for one of them. So today, I want to talk to you about Joint. Every construction project is a unique prototype, and it's actually shaped by thousands of decisions that impact the owner's business case, design, and the budget. Today, the communication driving these decisions is disjointed across all the stakeholders. Work happens in email, Excel, estimating, resulting in delays, waiting for decisions, waiting for access to information, and sometimes that information is outdated and incomplete. Managing the expectations of the team and keeping the project moving forward is a constant challenge, and a lot of times drives skepticism amongst the contributors. Joint empowers general contractors to build with confidence and maximize the potential of every project by connecting these owners through new workflows that fit into your existing processes. We bring design teams and trade partners into a single platform. There's transparency and collaboration in the decision-making, which builds trust and sets projects up for success. You might be asking yourself, do you need another tool? Well, let me tell you, Joint fits in seamlessly with your processes and your other tools. In fact, we're here to help those other tools. Regardless of your estimating system or your project management process, Joint will be a valuable added resource without disrupting those other systems and your teams. Check out Joint, the collaborative project delivery platform for the built environment. Learn more at join.build. And we're back. All right, Dr. G, CEO and principal of Brassfield and Associates, but you're a lot more than that these days. Give us a little bit about how you got here and a little bit about you.
Well, I'll take you on my why. I had a chance within high school, I mean, just like any other student, ready for graduation. And I remember going into the college counselor, and she was saying that you will not graduate because of my race and ethnicity. And it floored me because I was like, I'm working so hard. I'm doing all I can. And from there, rather than being a deterrent from finishing and moving on and pursuing other goals that I had set for myself, I found that that was a pivotal point in my life. I could have taken one of two roads. One, to be like, I agree, you know, I won't graduate because of what life tells most minority students. Or I can take another path, which is be empowered and be driven and really push to do more. So I chose the latter, the push to do more. And from there, that ignited a fire for advocacy in this space for people who often are not included, not asked to participate, or overlooked for various different opportunities. And that driving force has now led me to be the Dr. G you see today. And it's truly through that adversity that allowed me to soar and to really want to make a difference for so many others. So again, I had that same push when I was working on my doctoral degree. I believed in myself, made it happen. I received 2 doctorate degrees because of adversity. Again, it's these things that allow me to push forward and overcome these barriers so that I can help others remove barriers and say that through my own testimony, that you too can become empowered. So I have an extensive background in both commercial construction as well as civil construction in the space of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and creating these massive strategy for large projects. And I just raised my hand to get in this space. I thought I was going to go into education. I thought I was going to look at high school exit exams from my doctoral research. But someone asked me, hey, you're good with policy. So can you take that same drive for policy and change and removing barriers and really look at construction and being that conduit to change? I said, sounds easy enough. I can help others and really look at ways of removing barriers or be more inclusive. And I've done this, that from, I mean, like I said, the commercial space to the civil space, looking at workforce, small business, youth engagement, charitable giving, when it comes to really intentionally making effort to include those organizations that are at the grassroots advocating for inclusion. And I, about 2021, the end of the year, the country has been faced with so much in the last, 3-4 years when it comes to equity and inclusion and diversity. And so I kept getting asked. I kept getting asked by so many people within industry, how do you do this? What does this really mean? Will we go back to before? Help me implement this program. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to dive heart and mind first. And I'm going to restart my business and really help not only one organization thrive and be very visible when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, but I get a chance in this space to now help multiple organizations in our industry overall when it comes to education, advocacy, and really having intentional and sustainable practices. So again, I focus on, as a consultant, jumping heart and mind in and working on some of the most iconic projects and helping some of the big ENR teams when it comes to inclusion, from employee resource group support or business resource group support, when you're thinking about retention of employees, promotion, really attracting talent. I also support strategy when it comes to RFP development, and then hosting outreach events, webinars and forums, talking to industry as a speaker. There's also different things that I have people on my team when it comes to messaging, making sure that the message, the words that we're saying are really inclusive to all and being mindful of that. So it's making sure that I talk to people of difference, going into communities, making sure that we are aware of our position, the overall purpose of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and that it's not really going anywhere because, I mean, that's not, you think like, what do you mean going anywhere? So many people ask me, when did this all start? 3 years ago when we were faced with social injustice that happened, unfortunately. And I'm like, no, these practices, there's a theory, there's a methodology, there's policy that started in the 60s, the civil rights movement. And then there's many different organizations that advocate for this particular space. And then, of course, there's technology, the technology component that captures the data, monitors the data, and helps us with metrics and measurables. Yeah, that was a little round, a long journey of how did I get here and what do I really do? Because people are like, you're fabulous, but what do you do? And I'm glad I'm so here today with both of you to really share this journey of my why, my business, and what I hope for our overall industry.
Yeah, I think anybody listening will know why we connected right away, because you started with why. I asked you about where you are and who you are, and you said, nope, I'm starting with my why.
You stole all my questions.
Yeah, you went through them all.
Done.
You kept asking me beforehand, what were the questions going to be? You just answered them all. I'm not giving you any questions again in advance. Now I got to come up with new ones. So you got involved and you're doing a lot around strategy. You're doing a lot of that consulting. But what I'm interested in is when you came into construction, what were some of the early issues that you encountered? And maybe where are some of those that have moved forward? And maybe where are the ones that you're saying, listen, we're pulling, but man, we need somebody pushing too.
It really was a point where it was not part of the team. So, for example, when I came in, it was considered Dr. G's efforts. It was, even though I was part of an organization, part of a team, part of some amazing minds in industry, but it was still like, oh, this is Dr. G's thing, this inclusion or this community event or this turkey giveaway. There was these different things that it was always mine. And the pivot was at a point where I had a chance to sit down with one of the regional directors at the time. He was serving as a GM. And I said, hey, let's make some changes in how we deliver this message. And he's like, okay. I said, I think it'll help us at our bottom line and help me and us as an organization get the momentum behind it. So let's change, and you take the position in our next regional meeting and talk about why this matters to us as an organization, why this serves as a differentiator, why this can help us generate more revenue beyond the right things to do. We got the right things to do, but how do we get there? So he took that position. He's like, I'll try it out, Dr. G. I'll try it out. So in the meeting, he discloses that this is our event. These are our activities. And he moved me up on the agenda because at first I was the last thing before all the project managers would go to back to their projects. They really didn't care what I was talking about. They were ready to go back and win more work or finish their construction schedule, what have you, what they're working on. And so once he moved me on the agenda from after project development, so project development is talking about all these upcoming pursuits and positioning with different design firms or even construction firms, the subcontractors, they're going into all that detail, the dollars, the revenue, the margin, all this stuff. And then now I'm after them. So I'm talking about, okay, that was a great overview on project development and all these resources, but now let's look at how do we position within the small business community, the workforce community, these charitable groups that exist in these areas that we're trying to pursue work. Again, that bottom line, it helped us win the work. And again, it raised the elevation of importance. It was like, ah, okay. And then it became our effort. Everyone wanted to be involved because now there's a dollar that we're disclosing and discussing. We're talking about how this inclusion effort anchors back into project development and it's the overall cycle. So again, it was me attacking the system and saying, how can we really strengthen the message and make it not Dr. G's effort? Because one person doing something, you know, you can't really make a lot of change. If you have a whole lot of people moving in the same direction with the same momentum, change will occur. Change will occur. It'll be challenging, but change will occur. And I was looking for a small incremental change for the long haul. That was my overall objective. And I'm so glad some of these things that we started when I was there, they're still doing. And that's what matters. It wasn't about the person. Oh, she's here. We're going to do it because she's saying do it. Or this role and this position. It's beyond that. It's part of the organizational culture. So you think about organizational culture and having organizations go in to do more than just because, or just the right thing to do. And so, and I hope that answered that question.
No, I want to flow on that because as we jump in today, I mean, now you're consulting with multiple different companies with different probably levels of culture. And, right. And as you look at adversity or barriers today, would you say, are they more so on the internal side, like getting leadership to buy and getting that culture? Or as you mentioned, there's also external players as well that play into this that have to get along as well. Like where are the barriers today as you look across multiple companies?
I think the biggest barrier I would say is just equity. You know, we talk about, you know, trying to figure out that word. Some companies don't want me to say that. Some companies do. It's just interesting on terminologies. But I'm like, equity is meeting people where they are. What do they need in order for us to advance our overall objective? So some people don't want to really hear about inclusion. Some people don't want to hear about unconscious bias or our differences. So my strategy is going in there and doing some kind of the initial assessments and seeing where they're at. No judgment. Because in order for us to really get deep conversations and have a real conversation, I need to understand their truth of where they are as a leader, where the organization is at its core. So I can really develop a inclusive strategy to say, okay, well, let's look at our existing programs. What do you have internally? You can't find them. You can't find them. Okay, well, what does that look like? That looks like, okay, let's tapping into your talent acquisition team or your HR team and then seeing where they recruit. Simple, right? Looking at their recruitment plan. They have it every year. It aligns with the strategy for a number of people that they want to bring in to do these amazing projects. And now it's looking at what on campus, or depends on what kind of recruitment they're looking at. It's a campus recruitment specifically. But what kind of recruitment on that campus for the college example, what are you doing on that campus? Are there groups that cater to diverse potential graduates that are in that area of interest? Simple. Not a lot of extra money that you have to spend. Mm-hmm. Just diving deeper into your core already existing plan and figuring out what diverse groups are on campus. How do we tap into them? Who's that champion on that campus that I can talk to help me move my overall objective, which is finding more diverse candidates? or people of difference to bring them into the organization. And then when they get there, it's looking at that. Okay, well, who's that welcoming team? Because there's obviously a welcome team at every company, whatever you classify them as. Who's that group or what is that group? And then what is their processes and procedures? And how do you make everyone feel like, again, they belong? When they come here, you got the inclusion, you got the diversity component, which is recruit, you know, bringing them in. Then once they get there, then what does that look like? And then having the fairness, is there a process and procedure to make sure that you're showing them difference, like your pictures on your website or the words that you're using, selection, right? That was a big thing for our industry, I think a barrier initially. A lot of the pictures didn't look like diverse candidates. And so how do we welcome a diverse group if we don't have pictures? Simple things, right? Didn't take anything. You're already out there taking pictures. Get some of the diverse people. Done. Easy. And you're seeing more change in that space. More organizations are taking that position. Like, these are simple fixes that you can do. And then once they get there, now you have the connection. Having the conversation. And I remember it was one executive leader that I had a chance to sit down with and kind of brainstorm on. And he said he had a chance to spend time with a candidate from a diverse background and who had a hardship growing up. And he said he was able to relate. I was blown away. And I said, how did you get to that deep conversation where you were comfortable enough to share your own personal journey? And he was like, well, Dr. G, we just started talking. And it was just one of those things that I was like, I'm going to give him a shot at the end. Give him an opportunity to be an employee here. And I'm like, that's what I want to see. I don't want to take Dr. G's class, you know, great profit, gratitude. But nonetheless, I want the change. That's what I want to see as a consultant. I want to see those changes. I don't want to see just the classes. We took your training, Dr. G, and now we have the Dr. G certificate of allyship. And now we're going to go back to our normal way of, but we can show them we have our allyship certificate and we've had 2,500 employees go through this training. I don't want that. I want to have the organization and its culture component change and really think and look at ways to be more inclusive. I mean, whether it be project, whether it be recruitment, whether it be promotion, there's so many different gambits where I'm having conversations with different organizations about what that looks like for them. And it has to be customized. It can't be cookie cutter. It can be cookie cutter.
No, it you hit a couple of things there that I think are unique and powerful, right? You're anchoring to what they care about. The same thing about why you're anchored to what you do and your why. You're anchoring to why that organization exists. It's not just about doing it. It's about, you know, how does this affect our bottom line? You heard those things. How are we going to effectively utilize and embrace this, but also embrace it towards our anchor of growth as an organization? That's something, that's a connection a lot of people can't make.
Right. And it's a hard one because I think when I first came into industry, I'm laughing because I'm thinking about another story that I'm going to share with you. But when I first came in industry, I was thinking about like, oh, we should do this because it's the best thing to do. It's more inclusive. And then I had this pivot and like, it's about the bottom line. We're in business to do business and to make money. So how do we do that? And it had me pivot to focus on that. By doing this, we retain, you know, more talent. We don't have to have extra costs for retraining. We also bring in a different perspective. We're thinking about things different. We're going into these diverse communities building. Why can't we have people that look like the community? Again, this change and shift. And I think back, what I was laughing at, as I thought about this one young professional I had a chance to mentor and bring into industry, I gave him a chance. He was, when the time I met him, working at Trader Joe's. And I remember the interview panel, they're like, well, you know, he doesn't have the background. He can't do this. I don't know. And I said, Trader Joe's teaches customer service. He's going to have the best way of looking at things when things get hard and difficult. And we interviewed him in a round robin. Everyone loved him. He was able to blow away the interview panel. And then in that first day, he comes to work. I'm like, hey, look, I don't have time to give you the whirlwind around the office. But what I want you to do is go with me to this this letter. It was a letter that we received from the owner. And we were trying to defend our position. And I said, it's high level meeting. I just need you to sit, listen. We'll talk about it later. He's like, oh, okay. So he goes to me this meeting and we're talking about scenarios. We're talking about dollars. We're talking about huge financial impact. If we don't deliver on this particular contract obligation, we're talking about how do we mitigate risk, all these deeper conversations. And then afterwards with debrief, he was like, whoa, Dr. G, you took me on a like from zero to 3,000 so fast. And I said, I needed you to start there. Because when far too often when we think about outreach or inclusion, it just starts with the warm and fuzzy. It starts with the warm and fuzzy. This is the right thing to do. We have to do this for our industry. But I'm like, let's dive into the deeper part of why it's important. All of these components that you were just able to hear is why we're doing what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And we got that it's important, it's the right thing, but we need to have that lens to look at how does this impact us financially? How does this impact the community? How does this impact these contract obligations that if we don't deliver on, there's liquidated damages on? And that's what we need to always have in the back of our mind. So I asked him, read the contract. That's my next task for you to do. You heard about why I'm driven and what I'm doing in my role, right? As a VP, you know, at this particular role, you see what I'm doing. So now I need you to read the contract. So now you can understand a little bit deeper of why I'm going to be like focusing on certain areas of these inclusion or compliance components. And he's doing exceptionally well. I'm so glad I took that. It was a risk for me. I didn't know if he was going to like industry or not because he jumped in the deep end of the pool. But he's still, I mean, exceptionally doing well. He's thriving. And I still keep that relationship with him to this day, even as a consultant, because I want him to succeed. And I want to bring him, have him reach back to bring others along to show them the importance of why we do the inclusion strategies on these large projects.
So I want to pause there because I think you made a profound point there about change management. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that your why is all about that change, like seeing that spark in people and that change, and that it's more about that than it is the money. Yep. But yet all of your points as to why we should convince others comes back to money, because mm-hmm. that is how the world works, right? And yep. I think there are so many technologists, so many change agents that get frustrated because they don't understand why other people don't share their why. Yeah. But that recognition that not everyone's going to share your why, but you can make more impact by selling their why is such a profound point that, yeah, you just very, very well spelled out how to do that.
I mean, the why I just got comfortable in sharing recently, I would say. It was a conversation I was having with Henry Nutt, and he was like, more people need to know your story. And I just paused and I thought, huh, okay. You know, like, because, you know, people will meet me and like, who's the person behind it? Where did this all this passion and drive and fire start for inclusion? And it started from that little girl in high school, that one person that kind of ignited that fire for, I'm going to help others. And I'm going to like really drive to make that passion. And, you know, again, Henry is amazing. And I'm so glad he, you know, kind of motivated me in that space to really to be my authentic self and share my journey with others.
Yeah, you even gave way to him. And so we've got an earlier episode with Henry. And Dr. G tried to offer him up first and keep us away, but it did not work.
Since you went back to it, I think let's pause for a second and tell, if you can, the story of how you got that double doctorate. Because to me, I was like, well, wait. All of a sudden, you just got a double doctorate because of adversity? Like, how did that happen? But there's a story to that, right? A little bit of that I think is a lot of what drives your...
Right.
Power.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So I started in one program, public administration, went to the University of Laverne, amazing institution. I mean, such a foundation for support. And I mean, just has really, really helped shape me into who I am today. But it was through those lessons learned, those processes, those systems that I had to really figure out. So I started my DPA in 2000, which is Doctor of Public Administration, 2001. So I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but nonetheless, 2001, I started that journey. And from there, I had a person that was chairing my dissertation that said that you're not ready to advance. You're not doctoral material. Again, that same kind of thread and theme. And I guess it was because how I was showing up, right? He was saying, you're not ready. He didn't respond to me. He didn't get back to me. So I'm like, I don't think I'm going to ever finish this program. So I looked at what can I do? I have already spent at that time, maybe 3 years of curriculum going through the actual coursework to finish. And I was working on the dissertation, the last component of completion of a doctoral degree. And then the only opportunity I saw at that point was, we have another program on campus. I'm going to start this EDD program, organizational leadership. So I went to the program. They were able to only waive 1 year. So I still had to incur 2 more years of coursework. And I was like, okay, well, this is stressful. I don't know if I'm going to do that. But I did it, finished the coursework, and I started working on the dissertation process. And I remember the advancement to candidacy. They're like, Giovanna, well, why will this program not become like that other program that you didn't finish, you didn't complete, and now you've avoided even interacting with them? And I said humbly, because it's not me. It's not because of academic rigor. It's not because of the overall program structure. It's not because of all these things when faced with finishing this degree at this magnitude that you're faced with. It was personality. It was personality and someone's perspective at that particular time. So they encouraged me to go back and talk to the new, there was a dean change, and I talked to her, told her my frustration. He hadn't responded to me in months. And of course, as these months are going on, you're paying for continuous enrollment. So it's a fee that you're paying in addition to the stress, the anxiety, the emotional, drama that you're going through just sitting and waiting. And so the dean was able to listen to me. She looked at all my notes. I had to give her all this data, and she was able to relieve me from that dissertation chair. And I had a certain window in that agreement to find another chairperson. So I was able to find another chairperson that was able to support, to grow me, to challenge me in so many ways, to really help me elevate in the space as a master of research and data. And I was able to not only finish the first dissertation, which is the EDD, which came out first, I finished that one, and I looked at what are leaders of organizations doing to help students pass the California High School exit exam? I finished that one first. And then within months later, I was able to defend the other dissertation with a whole nother committee. A whole different methodology and another theory. And that one was on instructional strategies that are used to help students pass the California High School exit exam. And it's that same thing that, again, at that time, I was looking at why Black and Brown students, this particular legislation and policy was coming out, where it was known with all this data that Black and Brown students did not test well. So my driver was, what is being done in Riverside County, specifically educational system, to help students pass, because they had a higher rates at that particular time that I was studying and looking at. Whereas the other school district, LA and San Diego, two of the largest, top three, San Diego, LA. But what are they doing in their district to really address this need for more inclusive practices? And so there was a bill. It was Mayor Karen Bass was assembly member at the time. She allowed me, it was the belief in her, she believed in me to let me test my research instrument on her educational committee. And from there, the feedback I got back was they were trying to float multiple measures at the time. It was an assembly bill that didn't pass, but multiple measures to help students get out of high school. And so it's kind of like, again, that driver to remove barriers, to help others, to figure out how marginalized communities can have their voice heard and be included. But these things that experience me fuel me, because I'm like, no, there has to be a way. I cannot let this overcome me or define me, but use it as a way to figure things out. That's how I got the two degrees and in the same academic year. But I figured out the system. I figured out when you were supposed to have your forms in, when you were supposed to make sure that you advanced, who did you need to talk to? Like, all of that was critically important to make sure you're hitting your deadlines and moving your milestones forward.
Which probably leans to why our environment is such a great place for you.
Yeah.
And the environment in which we're in, right? Because you overcame barriers.
Yep.
But conflict with a manager. I mean, that's a huge thing that came up in our retention survey, is issues with conflict with a manager. And
that barrier and conflict that generates the fire, but then you turn around now and give support and growth to others because you found someone in that process that supported you and helped you grow. And then you also figured out the system.
Right.
And I think that hacking of the system, right, and understanding it is how you unlock it.
Yep.
Because I will draw you back to what you said before about how you use and guide organizations that are going through those requirements and those needs. And you say, hey, you're doing all these things as an HR organization, a recruiting organization. We're not changing the dollars or anything. We're rerouting right? So we're hacking the system to go and take those funds and focus them to the areas we need to be compliant, but that are also going to be more fruitful.
Right.
And then connect them to the next piece of the process, which is onboarding and making sure they're supported, and also have people there that will support them. Mm-hmm. And understanding that part of that process is the words you use, the pictures mm-hmm. you use, and the mm-hmm. way that you show up.
Yep.
Which really ties all the way back to those barriers that you went through in the first place. It's that is a phenomenal origin story, so to speak, but also I think it explains a lot of why what you do is so successful right now.
Yeah. And I hope it's sustainable. My goal is like that we have these conversations, but different conversations down the line about what can we do? How does the industry continue to elevate? And we don't have a workforce shortage, you know, these simple things. And there was an article not long ago that Construction Dive had, and it was about the Hayes study. I think it was like 2017, 18 or something, but they were talking about more than 80% of construction professionals would consider leaving their current role, you know, according to that survey. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Or they would consider 65% of them would consider pay cuts, which is crazy, right? For moving out into another career or another industry. And that kind of aligns with what we're seeing today, right? When you think about the retention survey, kind of the same thing. If you think about leaders and they don't want to work for that particular, they're leaving industry. Why are they leaving industry? And it's like, what can we do? The simple stuff that we currently have in place to really retain this. We have to retain. I think about this major project, and it was Kansas City KDOT project, and they were experiencing liquidated damages. And you think like, oh wow, why are they not doing it? Maybe the materials didn't get there in time because they were missing their mark. They couldn't get the project complete. It wasn't because of materials. It was because they didn't have enough people to finish it in time. And I'm like, we've been talking about this workforce shortage. We've been talking about the impact industry. We've been talking. So I think now we're in a position where it's got our attention, because there's a lot of projects that are coming out from these Infrastructure Investment Job Act and the IRA, and then the other owners that have other things existing in their, you know, their look ahead schedule for projects. But we got to do something, and we have to do it now. We're kind of play catch up, like make it happen.
We need that catch up yesterday.
right.
Yeah. Yesterday.
My heart's pumping.
Yeah. And you need, definition of construction insanity, right? We do the same thing over and over again and wonder why we still have a labor shortage. Maybe we ought to change a little bit. Right. Maybe we ought to try some new things. And right. I think, you know,
or
we were talking about
right?
this.
There's that inclusion, simple inclusion. Stuff. There's people out there. We can find them. This is figuring out how we can engage them, bring them on in. And there's ways from, especially I'm like super excited. There's this one client I have. I'm super excited about them. They're in a space on the design side. And so they're like asking me about strategy. And so I don't want to tell this particular strategy, but it's thinking outside the box, because it's really a differentiator. But it's thinking outside the box enough to engage those that are often overlooked, especially when you think about neurodiverse groups. Mm. What can we do in our industry? Especially the design side, it's known in data that, you know, most people with neurodiverse experiences, art and creative side are something that they lean in. So why not tap into that market? There's Ability First, there's Autism Speaks, there's all these amazing organizations that really can help us as industry advance and engage those differences. So awesome. I won't tell you the whole secret of what I'm thinking about that particular client, but nonetheless.
That's right. Some of those things need to stay secret. Some of them, there's got to be some sort of secret sauce somewhere.
But it's not, because, again, we do these presentations. We're sharing. We're super excited about our secret sauce, or you figure out how the other contractor won the work and then they're promoting it. So you learn the secret sauce, but the how it's applied is the differentiator.
Right? I was going to say.
Just because everyone does the same thing. We all know about some of these practices, right? Inclusion, this is what it is. This is what it isn't. Lean, you know, all these things. But how we apply it is usually the difference. And then also how embedded within the organization are those practices? difference.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very different. And, you know, we were just at an event, and I'll be covering this in the news, but we were in an event, and that was the focus, was just give it all away.
Yeah.
Right. Cause it isn't a secret sauce, right? It's it's actually how you use it. It's how you implement it.
Right.
And you know, if you don't not careful, the industry you help might be your own. And that's a powerful piece if enough of us are doing it, and enough people are doing it, enough companies are doing it. And they're doing it for the right why, right? With guidance, and then we might help each other. We might solve some of the problems that we have, or at least start making some good dents in them. Nathan, you got that look on your face.
Well, all I can say is knowing and doing are two very different things. Because I know a lot of the things that Dr. G has been able to do, and I'm in awe at them. And I know that I don't have the capability or oftentimes the lived experience or certain things. I mean, that's a part of this is, it's one part secret sauce and one part, you know, superpower and kind of understanding that we all have different superpowers that we bring to the table and how do we bring our best selves and to be most effective. I think you've shown great examples of facing adversity, you know, thinking outside the box and coming up with new ways. And I think just the only thing I hadn't mentioned here that I'd written down was, you know, your natural growth mindset in this whole industry of so many folks that have that fixed mindset, and that, you know, how frustrating that must be. But also, like, just, I guess that would be my last question, maybe, as a lot of us are as change agents facing a lot of this burnout. Like, do you face burnout? How do you deal with it? What keeps you going every morning?
I do face. Hello, my name is Dr. G.
oh, you mean you're normal?
And I face burnout.
Damn, I thought you were special.
No, because you're talking about minds and hearts, right? You talk about DEI. It's a different type of driving force, right? You're touching that emotional strength. If you know the right thing to do, it's all of those things, and you're trying to put it back into the box, which is a financial box. And it's always, for me, it's one of those things where I'm like, it's so rewarding. You have this one person, maybe, for example, I'll give you there was this one person, she was from incarceration and she had her two children trying to go into construction, and she was given an opportunity and a chance. From there, she decided, hey, I want to learn about the business side. So she did. She came in as an apprentice and she elevated, journeyed out, learned about, you know, the business side, how to bid a project, construction schedule, all that detail behind it, and was able to start her own business. And now she's killing it. But it's just those kind of opportunities. But it wasn't an easy road for her. I mean, she does all this rebar, she does steel, all this stuff that she's able to work with all these companies. But it is these kind of, thing to push. You always have to be looking ahead. So when I think about burnout, I mean, that's you think about DEI fatigue. That's the newest trend. There's a lot of data and a lot of research in this particular space. And you're seeing where there's movement in DEI right now. There's been in the last 3-4 years, we have a lot of movement, but there's also a significant wave of opposition. I mean, we've had so many different ways of which people, it's almost like, can we go back to normal? Why are we here? What are we doing? And it's beyond what I've ever seen before. So we're seeing more practitioners in this space either leaving. I think it was a Rand conversation I was having, but it was looking at a year and a half, professionals for DEI are turning over and leaving DEI space across industry. So this is a larger than just construction. But again, it is that whole fatigue across the board. And we can look at maybe fatigue is being tired, being not wanting to participate, or it could be even the fatigue of camouflage, where we're blending in the backgrounds of these organizations to simulate or promote that we are about DEI, but we really weren't so much about DEI. We're going to go back, right? That fatigue, you think about the wear and the tire. And I'm working on an ed op with the National Coalition for Equity Impact. So that'll be coming out a little bit later on DEI fatigue and how it's looking at for policy perspective and legislative bills and legal cases that are all out there to dismantle civil rights achievements. And you'll see, like, from Florida to Texas to Utah to California, there's a surge of these legislation is really reaching an all-time high. But again, that's it's an ed-op. Hopefully it'll come out within the next month and a half. But it's us trying to really capture the DEI fatigue as a whole and put two different spins on it, from fatigue and fatigue, like camouflage style, or even tired and being burnt out.
I mean, that's where I think, you know, some of our listeners, we can draw together, because I think we're seeing in our space, on the technology side and on the innovation side and on the leadership in that, same, very different, but very similar in barriers and overcoming and process and change. We're seeing the same burnout at a very high rate. I mean, Nathan, we can talk about it from Sobelt. I mean, how many people shared during that day the level of burnout each has experienced? And I would imagine a group of folks, Dr. G, like yourself, together in the same room like that would say, yeah. And that's scary to me. I mean, it really is. I feel like we're at kind of a precipice there a little bit. It's a very scary one, dangerous one. We can tip forward or tip backward, and either way we fall over, right? Yeah. I think it's a sustainable march forward, progression that we need. And I'm just interested in, looking at the bills and the EdOp and those opportunities, but you know, if anybody's listening that has some of that burnout right now and some of that fatigue in the real way, what's your advice?
Henry always talks about putting your oxygen mask on first before you can help others.
So as a parent, I know that they always come by and they go, you know, make sure you put yours on for, I go, I know. And I always think about that. I always think about that comment. Cause you're right. Henry does always say that.
So I think about that when you say, how do you prevent your own or individual's burnout? Is make sure that you take care of yourself first. Being able to press pause, it's okay. To say, I need some time off, it's okay, right? You think about employee performance, and if you're showing up and you're not really there, how productive, how efficient, how effective are you going to be to the overall team? Because again, we operate in teams quite often for projects, for work, for volunteer stuff, teams. So if you're not showing up 100% to that team, what real value are you bringing to the overall? So for me, I mean, that's what I encourage. I would take that same wisdom that Henry shared with me, which is putting on your own oxygen mask first and being okay with to say, I need this time right now for me to get it together, and then regroup, come back stronger than ever, because your perspective is going to be clearer. Your thoughts, what you're going to bring to the team, your drive, all those things really, really matter.
Yeah, that authenticity that you show up is there. And it's funny because that did come up on the show with them. And I say the same thing and learn the same thing. It's that's why they teach you that. It's why self-care gets seen as selfish, but it's not. It's selfless, because you got to show up for yourself first. But I think that's such a challenge in our milestone-driven, project-driven, results-driven world. We don't appreciate or respect someone who does that. And what I found interesting, I'm reading a lot of Brené Brown's work recently, and love her. And one of the things that I keep going back to is clear is kind, and boundaries are part of that. And knowing a boundary and saying no, as a people pleaser, Nathan, you know this, and me, saying no is very hard for me.
Right. Me too.
But it will take me to burnout.
Yeah.
And if I can be clear about those boundaries, which I'm not very good at, I can be kind to those people. And I don't think it's seen as clear as kind. I think that was one of the shifts for me.
Did you listen to that Seth Godin interview on Simon Sinek's podcast?
No, my daughter.
That's why I told you to. That's exactly.
My daughter couldn't get through it.
Go now.
She couldn't get through it on the drive.
We'll stop the podcast right now. Go listen to it.
Stop the podcast. Rewind. Well, if you're tuning in and you want another podcast, which you should just listen to all Contact Crew podcasts. I'm just kidding.
Yes.
You should jump on and take a listen to Simon Sinek's
A Bit of Optimism.
A Bit of Optimism with Seth Godin. I have it queued up, but I have not finished it yet. So You know, maybe when we're finished here today and I'll get out on the bike and I'll throw that one on. But, you know, it's competing with Brené Brown, though. So it's tough.
Well, I'm taking notes on both of them. I'm writing down like, got to look at both of them.
And if you haven't listened to Henry Nutt's interview, obviously that one's got to be first.
Yes, I loved it.
it was
the stew when he talked about the stew, right? You can't microwave the stew.
I use that all the time. And he gets you can't microwave the stew. It's so funny. You can put all the ingredients in the pot, but you can't microwave it.
You can't microwave
it. You gotta let it boil.
Right.
You gotta let it simmer. I am not kidding you. I had just had a conversation with a person that at an organizational level, they are trying to microwave the stew. And I can't. How do you explain to an organization that you just can't microwave the stew?
They have to fall on their face. It's like parenting, right? Like you can't helicopter parent. You got to let them make the mistakes and learn from them.
Yep. I think it's
disagree with you.
No, you can't disagree. Do what you want to do.
I fully agree with him. I just don't like it because I'm like naturally driven, like, well, Nathan and
you, you have a 15-year-old. It might be a little different.
Yeah, I get it. Fantastic. It's just been fantastic to have you sit down with us today, Dr. G. I was so excited to do this. Nathan was chomping at the bit to jump in with me, and I have certainly been chasing you for a while. Yes. So thank you so
I'm
much
glad
for
to
your
see
time.
Both of you. Mm-hmm. What I didn't share is technology. I didn't even talk about the technology in this space. For monitoring and tracking and innovation, right? So we have two amazing people that I hope you would bring on. We have Mark Douglas from ALCP Tracker. He monitors the workforce components of it. And he created a visionary individual, created this system, again, LCP Tracker, that tracks the certified payroll and breaks it down in a way at which he can see the employees, the backgrounds, where they were from. He has a dashboard. He runs scenario. And most of these large infrastructure projects will have this LCP Tracker used on it as a requirement of contract. There's also Justin Talbot. Mm-hmm. That has B2G Now, which is the system used to improve efficiency and effectiveness when it comes to payments being issued to all the contractors on the project. So every single tier, he looks at that. He looks at how fast they're getting paid. Also, if there's discrepancy. So, for example, the payment, $5 payment's going out. The subcontractor has to verify that they received the $5, and there can't be a variance of that. If not, it's flagged, and then you have to resolve it and work with the subcontractor. So it helps them communicate, resolve, and they have all this different innovation and technology. So for both of those two are phenomenal when you're talking about just for your tech people in construction. Be great.
That would be awesome. I'll be tracking those down, pun intended.
Yeah.
And actually, I wanted you to talk about the technology when we get into the news. That was one of my tricks. Don't be sorry. Jump in. I love a good name drop. I love advancing everybody, right? We're on a platform. We have a platform here. So it elevating everybody is just fine. So with that, we're going to jump into the construction technology news of the week. And I'm going to go right to you, Nathan. What do you got for me, buddy?
Oh, I got a couple fun ones. So this one actually mildly related, but related to certainly the dollars and cents. So was listening to a Freakonomics podcast recently that referenced back to a report from, I think, 2004 in the UK. But I learned that ultimately the UK has a way for dealing with optimism bias in their transportation project planning. So they know that projects are, you know, surprise, surprise, over budget and over schedule. And so it says here that this Green Book Guidance on Optimism Bias notes that there's a demonstrated systematic tendency for project appraisers to be overly optimistic, and that to redress this tendency, appraisers should make explicit, empirically based adjustments to the estimates of a project's cost, benefits, and duration. So essentially what that's saying is that they apply a factor cost to projects in order to better budget for taxpayers and other things as a way to get rid of that optimism bias, which is something that we certainly deal with a lot in construction. So those of us that are data nerds and always looking for different ways to impact public policy or look at them, I thought this was kind of a fun share from the archives that may provide some good evidence for you to make your case for similar changes here in the U.S.
I think you're on to something there because it I'd be really interested. I'm going to have to dig in and read longer because this was a long one.
Oh, yeah. I didn't read it myself. I just listened to the podcast.
Yes. Hey, that's okay. That's a biohack, right? Or some sort of, it's a learning hack that you can read, you can listen in. But for me, this has a lot to do with, you know, we see this in estimating all the time. How often do we really apply the best case scenario to everything we're doing? We expect sunshines and roses, and things aren't sunshine and roses in our business at all. No. In fact, they're not in most life. And so there is a bias there that it's kind of cool to see if data can uncover that bias and inform our future, right? One of the beauties of is data, people try to take data and say data-driven. It's like, no, the data doesn't drive. The data informs.
Right. Data reacted.
Yeah. It's data informed so that we get better and more accurate and more targeted into the future, right? If we didn't have things measuring what Dr. G's talking about, we really wouldn't know if we're making a difference or not, right? It's part of the process.
What gets measured gets managed, right?
Yeah.
One thing that's interesting to note in the numbers is that, you know, like roadways, for instance, would range from 15 to 32% over budget, but rail projects were between 40 and 57% over budget. Wow. And then, of course, yeah, the IT projects were between 10 and 200%. Surprise there.
How did they determine the factor to use on those?
Right? Well, because you don't know what you don't know, especially with IT, right?
Crazy. This is true.
But my other one is more of a kind of a fun share for myself, as I'm always learning new terms. And thank you, Dr. G, for educating me these last few years. I know like terms like intersectionality and other things that, you know, I'm always, you know, learning as we go. But one that you mentioned equity quite a few times, and I was reading an article, just shared one here from International Women's Day, about equality versus equity, two terms that I had just kind of assumed were synonymous. And there's some really great graphics in here that explain the difference. I'll read the definition real quick. So equality means each individual or group of people is given the same resources or opportunities, versus equity that recognizes each person has different circumstances and allocates the exact resources and opportunities needed to reach an equal outcome. So I thought that was a really interesting nuance and kind of, yeah, again, we were brainstorming different examples either within the workplace or within construction specifically, where we are either doing equality and we should be doing equity or good examples of equity. I don't know if you had any offhand.
Right. I think when, you know, we think about equality is just making sure everyone has whatever it is. Everyone's equal. Everyone has something of whatever it is, equal access. But then if you think about equity specifically, it's really meeting them where they are. What do you need to be successful? Do you need more time to fill out this particular employment application because of your learning disability? Or do you need additional benefits that support your partner? You know, what, you know, how do we make sure that we have a equitable process? And I think about the work, I have a chance to serve as chair of a steering committee with RAND Foundations. It's called the Center to Advance Racial Equity Policy. Equity is that key word in there, but it looks dedicated to issues of social justice and racial equity. And the center supports like a portfolio of innovation, high impact racial equity research and analysis, and really collaborates, you know, as a whole to inform more people about the difference in equity as a whole. And there's so much research and so much data that they have out there. But having conversations, and I think the biggest one, her name is Dr. Rihanna Rogers, who's the center director, phenomenal, brilliant person. I mean, gosh, she would be great to have on here too. She's really good with the numbers. Like you guys would geek out all together. But she makes sure that others understand the importance of this information, but she breaks it down in a way that's easy to use. And she's been really, I mean, I've been making connections for her, helping her advance construction. So she has done some presentations on infrastructure, looking at LA 28 and economic impact for our Los Angeles, Southern California region. And then she'll be speaking at NAWIC as one of the keynote speakers. I took her to ENR when I was one of the keynote speakers there. But I think more people need to hear about this research that's been conducted far beyond the last 3 years, but on the bigger picture and the difference between equality and equity. And the E's are hard. It's real fast. I know I don't want to take away from our news update, but the E is hard to get into some of these organizations. They don't want to talk about that E. They want to do the D and the I. They don't want the E, because the E, you have to identify there's a difference in how you treat people. in order to improve, rather than looking at it like this is hope, this is a way that we can be more proactive and innovative. No, they don't want it. It's interesting conversations being had.
Yeah, people can't see the pictures while they're driving. So Nathan, I'm going to steal your earlier talk, because equality is having safety vests for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. But equity is actually having the right size and, you know, say female specific. So that's equity, that 90, you know, most of what's built is built for men.
Yep.
Equity is having the right ones for women and for others. So that's the nuance that I didn't realize either. And I just really like how the graph did it. It did it with a bike, which I, you know, really like the graph.
And the very last quote there is just a shoe. Equality is giving everyone a shoe. Equity is giving everyone a shoe that fits.
Uh-huh. That's there you go.
Kind of simple way of thinking about it. Yeah. So all kinds of analogies for everyone to remember the difference. Now.
I love the safety vest one. That was a spot on. Yeah. Especially you think about women have been complaining for a long time, their jackets or safety vests being caught on materials, being very dangerous on the job site. So again, that equity, having a vest, which you're seeing more organizations take that position to give a vest designed specifically for women to make sure that they're all inclusive and equitable.
Yeah. And I was sitting, and you can give me feedback on this one. I was sitting at a panel at AGC Wisconsin right after the pandemic ended, and there's a group of women, and they said, you know, there's porta potties everywhere, but what makes us feel great is when there's some women specific porta potties that they're just made for us.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is the most simple thing I didn't think of ever. I'm like, that's just. Okay, there you go. Again, these aren't all groundbreaking. The harder part is you got to be willing to look for those things, right? And then they probably do get harder as they go along, but there are simple ones too as well that can help you grow momentum.
Right, I agree. And you talk about job site, man. I mean, I wish we had a whole nother hour to dive into that one, equity versus equality. It's a whole different ball.
Just bathrooms, we could spend a whole hour.
I was going to say, the bathrooms and safety gear we could spend a couple of hours on. So so I feel like we're going to have to do this one at another tab. I got one for you here. This is an interesting one because I think we can tie it back to what you were just talking about. And I just grabbed it. It's from Construction Dive. It's subcontractor automation boosts profits while cutting costs. So this is really interesting. General contractors automating subcontractor management processes are seeing positive results in productivity, costs, and profits, but roadblocks are still in some builders' paths, according to a new Dodge Construction Network survey, which y'all will know we had just recently had Steve Jones on from the Dodge Construction Network. So one of their recent studies. And it says, Dodge performed in partnership with construction software firm GCPay. 91% of contractors who use sub-management technology had improved productivity. 81% had lower costs, and 79% had higher profits. Wow. Now, this is really interesting for me because the cost of money is going up.
Yeah.
And Dr. G, you talked about it before when you talked about what Justin Talbot and Mark Douglas are doing and tracking those things and looking at it. Man, getting our subcontractors paid and getting our trade partners paid faster and is amazing, especially because the cost of money is going up.
Right.
And minority women-owned businesses, the smaller businesses that carry a higher burden because of the higher cost of money and the relative impact of that is going to be huge. And so I'm excited for the automation. I'm excited for the capabilities. Although what the study I don't think really shows is that there's just not enough of it.
Oh.
It's still too low. We're still not paying people fast enough. We are still our inability to automate and move is still not there. Yeah. It's getting there, but it's just not there yet.
I wonder that, I mean, now in this space as a small business, right? So now, I mean, all the stuff and practices that I used to talk about while corporate, now independent, I think this is one of the hardest things ever. And I think you nailed it spot on, which is the payments. What takes so long? I'm just like, what takes so long? Why do you need, you know, even going into contract negotiation? That's one of the areas I attack first. Like, hey, we got to nip this in the bud. One of the client's contract agreements said 60. 60 to 70 days, you know, and I'm like, what? Why do you need so long to process this one paper, this invoice? And of course, that was an area we got it down to 30 days. But I was like, he's like, usually we don't do this. Why? Is it just because how you've been doing it? Is it like, how do you improve efficiency and effectiveness? If you know that's a problem for your subcontractors or your consultants, and I still don't know. And I just, of course, I'm going to keep on circling back on that. I'm like, why does it take so long? I just don't understand.
Listen to this, though, because this is the last paragraph. And Bill, thank you for this one. Indeed, in 2023, subcontractors have increasingly paid out of pocket before getting paid themselves. Mm-hmm. Results from builds showed that 87% of respondents reporting paying out of pocket, up from 62% in 2022.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Think about that.
That does not surprise me at all. At all. Or people, you know, some of the people will approach and say, hey, doctor, we need to do this now without an LOI or agreement. You might have to do a retainer, depends on how fast, you know, what other contractors say about you.
Yes. But let's flip that script, because here is something for any of you GCs in that market. Mm-hmm. If you can, and there is great new tools out there to help you with it, if you can speed up that payment cycle, you can fuel your engine faster. You can be the GC of choice. You can chase more work. You can be a bigger and you can grow, and people will love working with you, and you will deliver even better projects. So right. There you go. We'll put the dollars to that.
Yeah. Great points. Great points.
And the last one's just a plug. And that's right. I get to do this every once in a while and give a plug, because I'm on more than one podcast, if anybody didn't know that. The Construction Dorks. We just did this So Built. We released a bonus episode. We sat down at the table the day after the So Built summit. And Nathan, you're calling it something new.
The term is Transformation Summit. I think Charlie had called them unconferences or something. Yeah, it was.
Of course he did.
I know, but this idea of regardless of the topic, you know. Coming together as a group to go through this sort of, experience, you know, transformational experience that Kelly so well articulated, and others that were there. I think, it was a powerful event that, I'm glad we were all down there.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. And on the bonus episode, Charlie Dunn that you referenced, Nathan Wood, you're on it. Christina Henkai, the organizer's on it. Tony Altimus, who, gosh, was he awesome.
From Quant, yeah.
Yeah, from Quant, Jesus Jesse Hernandez, Armando Mondo Tenalis, and Kelly Lubalai were all sitting around the table, and yours truly threw a microphone in front of them and captured a little moment of gold, in my opinion. So give that a listen, jump over and become a Construction Dorks fan, because, we're getting a whole bunch of stuff done in a whole bunch of different places. Right, Dr. G?
Right. I agree.
Well, with that, I want to call this a wrap for the day. I'm really excited you finally let me pin you down and get you on the show, Dr. G. I hope it wasn't as painful as it might have felt.
No, this was great. I mean, I really enjoyed our time today. I mean, just speaking with you. I mean, it's always great to have these connections and touch points. And I hate that it waited so long, but I'm glad it won't be the last time. And I look forward to more.
It won't be the last time. Nope. And that's all right. It was the right time, right? That's the way it goes.
Yep.
Nathan Wood, this is always fun to have you on the show.
Hey, anytime I can tag myself in there. It's a tough gauntlet with all those hosts. You know, I had to fight really hard to get Dr. G for this one, but I raised my hand. I was lucky.
Yep. 14 hosts might not be lucky these days. Next time. You never know.
You never know. I think you got both of you guys. I'm all in. Just awesome. Give me the dates in advance.
Yeah, we'll try to get you those dates as far out as we can. And listen, if you guys aren't following Dr. G, check her out. We'll have her LinkedIn, et cetera, there. Follow her. If you're looking for someone who can really help you with that change and navigate what are difficult waters, right? They're difficult waters, but anything worth doing is difficult. Technology, DEI, all those change. Change is difficult, but anything worth doing is, and the satisfaction of doing it right, well, that's the part we all get to have. Ooh. So thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Dr. G. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is the Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.